So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, which is entitled The Creation of the Fourth Order. In chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachinabarhi. Text 60. Narada uvacha yenaiva rabbate karmam tenaiva mutra tatpuman bhunkte hyabhyavadhanena Lingena manasa svayam yenaiva rabbate karmam tenaiva mutra tatpuman bhunkte hyabhyavadhanena Lingena manasa svayam. Your turn. Yenaiva rabbate karma. Tenaiva mutra tatpuman. Bhunkte hyabhyavadhanena lingena manasa svayam narada uvacha tatpuman Bhunkteha vyabhadhanena
Lingena manasa svayam
Matajus Tehya vyavadhanena Lingena manasa svayam What's that? Delay?
Echo.
Word meanings. Narada uvacha Narada said Yena, by which, Eva, certainly, Arabhate, begins, Karma, fruitive activities, Dena, by that body, Eva, certainly, Amutra, in the next life, Tat, that. Puman, the living entity. Bhunkte, enjoys. He, because. Avyavadhanena, without any change. Lingena, by the subtle body. Manasa, by the mind. Svayam, personally. Translation. The great sage Narada continued. The living entity acts in a gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body, composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus, there is no change. Prabhupada's commentary to this is as follows. The living entity has two kinds of body, the subtle body and the gross body. Actually enjoys through the subtle body, which is composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. The gross body is the instrumental outer covering. When the gross body is lost, or when it dies, the root of the gross body, the mind, intelligence, and ego, continues and brings about another gross body. Although the gross body is apparently changed, the real root of the gross body, the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego, is always there. The subtle body's activities, be they pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus, the subtle body continues, whereas the gross bodies change one after another. Since modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic, and since their knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy, they cannot explain how the gross body is changing. The materialistic philosopher Darwin has tried to study the changes of the gross body, but because he had no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he could not clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. One may change the gross body, but it works in the subtle body. People cannot understand the activities of the subtle body, and consequently they're bewildered as to how the actions of one gross body affect another gross body. The activities of the subtle body are also guided by the supersoul, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mata smritir jnanam pohanam cha. That is, I'm seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. End quote. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Supersoul is always guiding the individual soul, the individual soul always knows how to act according to the reactions of his past karma. In other words, the Supersoul reminds him to act in such a way. Therefore, although there is apparently a change in the gross body, there is a continuation between the lives of an individual soul. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Kinanjana Shalakayan Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangum Langate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Pande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyai Vacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The great sage Narada continued, the living entity acts in a gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus, there is no change. It is always revealing to see things in context. If, as the saying goes, that a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, basically means if you see things out of the context, then you get a wrong picture. Flip it other way around. If you see things within the context, then things, then you can see things for what they are, as they're related to the rest of the creation and so on. So, in this chapter, actually this whole section of the Bhagavatam begins with Narada Muni wanting to show kindness to King Prachinabarhi, right? That's his name. Okay. Head's nodding, no. Okay. Okay. It's King Prachinabarhi, I'm pretty sure. Now what's so interesting? Why did he want to show kindness or mercy to King Prachinabarhi, and especially in the way he did? Namely, he told him a story. And then upon explaining the story, he told him a few more stories. After all, the king was engaged in sacrificial activities. Like he was literally performing sacrifices. And sacrifices are integral part of Vedic concept of civilized life. So within Vedic culture, everyone performs sacrifices. As a matter of fact, even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, after making introduction into the Bhagavad Gita, he goes on to speak about sacrifices. And he says that the goal of life is to sacrifice. He says that if you're seeking the Supreme, you'll find the Supreme where? That's a question. If anyone remembers from the Bhagavad Gita in regards to sacrifices? No. You would make an excellent serial killer. You have a very serious look. You scare me, man. I'll be at my best behavior. Sorry. Krishna says you'll find the Supreme in the acts of sacrifice. And literally, what the chapter describes is yajna, which in English we translate as act of sacrifice, and I'm not sure how it's translated into Slovenian. Žrtvovanje. So this is what the king was doing. He was engaged in sacrifices. But there was a problem with these sacrifices, that they were done for a wrong reason. So, for example, if you continue reading the Bhagavad Gita, the chapter that follows the third chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge, or Divya Gyan, the Transcendental Knowledge. Why Transcendental Knowledge? What is the point of this chapter? The essential point of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is that it qualifies the third chapter. So in the third chapter, yes, you're taught to perform sacrifices, but then in the fourth chapter you're taught that you should perform sacrifices for right reason. And if you don't perform them for the right reason, meaning for spiritual reason, then you get no spiritual benefit. And Prabhupada then repeats this in the purport to the verse. You get no spiritual benefit. In other words, you could be going through the motions of a spiritual activity, but if Divya Gyan is not there, in other words, the understanding, the appropriate intention, then one does not get spiritual benefit. And so this was the problem of the king Prachinabarhi. He was engaged in sacrifices, but with a fruitive mentality. A fruitive mentality is a mentality that dictates one to do things because the things are somehow or other materially profitable. And as a matter of fact, if you look around the world, there are very few people who psychologically, emotionally function otherwise, meaning that they do things because things are good. Most people do things because they're somehow or other materially profitable. Or just profitable. Before the Second World War, Hitler was spinning out of control. And so, in one point became obvious to everyone that this guy, together with this political party, together with the whole country, are just spinning out of control. But, you know, people thought, well, that's in Germany. It's not in my backyard. So whatever darn thing they want to do, that's their business. And so in one point, Germany annexed Austria, right? Oh, so it was first Czech. Oh, okay, I see. I didn't understand that word because now I know why. Because it's a name of a region in Czech Republic. Okay, so first that happened, and what did Europe do? Nothing. That's right, nothing. Why? It wasn't profitable. There was no profit to be derived from it. And then they annexed Austria, right? And then, again, the world, no, whatever. It's not in my backyard. Actually, it was. I mean, France was right there. What happened next? I forget. Do you remember?
Peace of Poland,
okay. And then the whole hell broke loose. I don't know how I'm going to translate that. All hell broke loose. Everything went wild. At this point, when they actually, excuse me, we forgot one important detail, that before Hitler had his troops marched into Poland, he first had a phone call, or maybe even a personal meeting with Mr. Demon Stalin. Prabhupada said he was a demon, so I can say that. He had a meeting with him. What was the meeting about? That, well, you can occupy Poland as long as we get our slice. And only after the Poland, then Germany showed obvious interest in France. And this is where then French started to, mobilize the troops and organize defense lines and so on. And then the Second World War basically broke out. One country after another got involved. But this is how human mind functions. And this is, if we were to think, I don't know if anyone here has seen that documentary, Corporation? Anyone seen Corporation? It's like a 2-hour long documentary, hour and a half. No? Okay. Anyhow, the idea was that the people who made the documentary, they thought of corporation as a person. Because legally, corporation is treated as a person, even though it's represented by a bunch of other people. So even though these people may do abominable things, they're not legally responsible. They're not blamed. Who takes blame? The corporation, because corporation is an entity, like literally like a living being. So the producers of this documentary thought that, okay, so if the corporation is treated as a person, then let us think of the corporation as a person. And so psychoanalyzing this person, the corporation, it just became, after watching the documentary, it becomes very obvious that this person is tremendously ill. That is, it's a psychopath. And the same thing, if we were to think of countries as individuals, they're behaving as darn psychopaths. And this is not being recorded, right? Oh, it's being broadcast. Okay. And recorded, okay. They may not let me back in the States. But this is exactly how, why are the countries behaving like this? Because the governments are like this. Why are the governments like this? Because the individuals are like this. Why are individuals like this? Because this is the, what's the word? This is the social paradigm. This is the philosophical paradigm as to what life is about. So most of the people, maybe even some of us, were not motivated in life by that which is right, but by that which is profitable. And this is literally a demonic quality. In Bengali, there is a saying that whether you steal a cucumber or you steal, what's the other thing? A jewel. You're still a thief. One is a small thief, the other one is a big thief. There's that conversation Prabhupada had. Cucumber. Yeah, so it rhymes. But there's a funny incident Prabhupada had with an Indian industrialist as we were walking somewhere, and he was saying how he was a pious person and that he was regularly giving donations. But Prabhupada was making a point that, look, you're stealing. You're a thief. You're stealing. He says, no, I'm not stealing. I'm paying for everything. I take the sand, I bake the sand, and then I make glass. Prabhupada says, but who created sand? So then, being from India, he understood the point that, okay, sand comes from God. So he says, but he says, but I give donations. And Prabhupada says, okay, then you're a little thief. You're not a big thief, you're small. So this tends to be the psychological makeup of a common Kali Yuga creature. And in case if we ever wonder why so much noise about fruitive activities and being fruitively motivated, this is the reason. Because disease, if not treated, it increases. Like if a person has a small infection, like I have an infection in my sinus here. And if I don't treat it, it just goes all over and you die. It just spreads everywhere. So even though, you know, many of us might be suffering from a small amount of fruitive disease, but the principle of this disease is it's literally abominable. And this tends to then spread everywhere. It tends to spread everywhere. It tends to spread to relationships. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defined past tense. Defined. He defined materialistic concept of love as I scratch your back, you scratch mine, and we call that love. So for example, when a being enters our conscious experience, we have one of two sensations. pleasing or unpleasing sensation. If it's a pleasing sensation, if it's not pleasing sensation, we try to push this person out of our sphere of conscious experience. And if the person's if the event is pleasing somehow or other to our consciousness, then we become possessive. And people call this love. Very often people therefore want to or marry or some or other seal the deal. And if that person, let's say, wants to leave our conscious experience, then we beg, we plead, we threaten, we beat, we kill. You can go to great extremes. And all stems from same problem, this fruitive mentality. And this was the problem with King Prachinabarhi. And he was a very pious person. He was just performing Vedic sacrifices. But with the idea that I will prolong, if not perpetuate, material enjoyment. And so therefore, Narada Muni wanted to show him the favor. And so he spoke against, he painted a picture of what is actually happening here. And so he told him a story of Puranjana. Almost forgot it. Told him the story of Puranjana, where Puranjana, the living being, travels around the world, in search of a suitable or enjoyable place to live. And there are different cities and villages that Puranjana encounters, but eventually settles in the best of all cities that it has ever found, the city of nine gates, meaning the human form. Because the enjoyment in human form is just amazing. And so, what's the title of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Purushottama Yoga, right? What's the topic of the chapter? Okay, and then at the end? Liberation. Yeah, surrender. Liberation. And so Prabhupada, liberation from this world. And so Prabhupada, at the end of the chapter, produces a commentary on the same chapter by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he says that the living entity suffers from two hridaya dorbalyam, the two aches, two pains, or two diseases of the heart. Let's see if I can remember. One is to possess or control matter, and the other one is to enjoy it. Yes. So one is to possess it and the other one is to enjoy it. We could say possess or control, that's the same thing. And the other one is to enjoy it. And what is the result, if anyone remembers, or maybe even from our own lives we could quickly draw a conclusion. What is the result of enjoying, what is the result of selfishly enjoying matter? Suffering, definitely. That's also true. It's very true. Attachment? Okay. And what does the attachment result in? Definitely. Fear also. But I'm just looking for what Prabhupada said there. Anger, that too. My goodness. You can write a book from all the comments. ignorance. So what is the source of ignorance? The source of ignorance is immorality. And immorality is almost always in this world exhibited as fruit of activity. Or desire for fruit of activity. In other words, not to do that which is good. Not to do that which ought to be done. But to do that which some or other profits me. And therefore to reverse the process is to seek liberation. To become selfless. That's why the yagya, the sacrifice. And yet, he was engaged in sacrifice for fruitive purposes. This is like being almost fortunate, but terribly unfortunate. Like you're right there, but you miss it by a few inches and you go, wow, completely to the other side. And so this disease is a moral disease. It's not a disease of the physical body. Physical body is a morally neutral thing. There's no moral quality to the body. It's just whichever way you use the body will define it morally. I must not forget. Come back to me. So this is not the disease of the gross body. This is disease of the subtle body. Actually, it's not even the disease of the subtle body. It's not even the disease of the subtle body. Even though the subtle body carries this disease, but the subtle body exists there only because of the presence of the soul. In other words, the problem, ladies and gentlemen, is spiritual. The problem is spiritual. And therefore, the greatest charity one can ever bestow upon anyone is to heal someone spiritually. And this is something that materialists cannot understand. You know, often you hear, especially in India, where altruism is ultra. And they say, where are your hospitals? Well, it's right here. It's not a hospital for the gross body. It's not even for the subtle body. It's the hospital for the soul. So literally, the soul is diseased. The disease is reflected in the subtle body, and therefore it keeps shifting from one gross body to another. And it can go on literally forever. Until the soul becomes morally correct. In other words, stops this fruitive endeavor. Time's up. Okay, time's up, whatever. If there are any questions or comments. Oh, sorry. Yes. And then two over there.
What do you think about bank accounts? I don't know if you want
to. Bank accounts are morally neutral. Depends how you use them. Did that answer the question? Sorry, I was actually being rude for cutting you off, but I got very excited.
If you want, I don't know, in the future buy an apartment, car, is that moral?
Yeah, again, anything material is morally neutral. Even external activities to almost completely, are morally neutral. It is the reason for which we perform activities that will characterize that activity as moral or immoral, or we could say spiritual or materialistic or right or wrong. So having a bank account in many ways is intelligent. Yet for some other people, having a bank account might be a huge stumbling block. For example, modern banking is literally, giving people possibility to be as greedy as they can imagine and beyond that. For example, in pre-industrial systems, wealth was dhanavan, what is it, Prabhupada's, gyanavan, one who has cows and grains is wealthy. How does that go? Gavaya dhanavan. And what's the other one? That's for cows and any. Oh, is it? Okay. Thank you. So in pre-industrial systems, there was no fiat currency like nowadays. I assume you all know what fiat currency is. Means that Prabhupada wrote about this way before he came to the States. And I remember reading this at the age of 14, and I had no clue what was he talking about. When the real estate market collapsed in America in 2008, then we all quickly learned what fiat currency is. It means money that's not backed up by gold. Means someone can just print money. Why can't I print money? It's just complete cheating. Anyhow, but in pre-industrial times, there was no currency. Valuables were what people needed. So you needed a cow, okay. How many cows can you have? Imagine you have a house. How many cows can you have? There's a limit to it. How many elephants can you have? You know, how many squashes or zucchinis can you have, or bell pepper or whatever? Horses and giraffes and there's a limit to it. But nowadays, you can literally be unlimitedly greedy because your wealth is simply a number in a computer, in the bank account, which is not backed by any real value. We have artificially ascribed value to smelly and dirty piece of paper. And it literally allows for unlimited greed. We learned this lesson from Vamanadeva. This is what Vamanadeva was telling Bali Maharaj. And Bali at first couldn't grasp the point. But he told him, if one does not know the art of satisfaction, that person will never be satisfied. That person could literally have everything, all matter, and not be satisfied, and still want more. Because that's the nature of greed. It knows no limits. And so modern world, Srila Prabhupada writes in Isha Upanishad, in a commentary to a verse, that modern world is experiencing a materialistic fever. And instead of cooling the fever, they're simply feeding it. This European Union, I mean, when I heard of it some years ago, first time I was thinking, this is very bad news. But it's Kali Yuga, ought to happen. For example, in traditional systems, in pre-industrial systems, everywhere in the world, in pre-industrial economy, people had their autonomy because they had their own economy, local economy, and they owned land. And that land was literally the source of their income. How many people own real estate these days? Maybe in Slovenia still a little bit, I know in Croatia. But now people are selling more and more and more. And who's buying? People already have a lot. So you end up like what you have in America. You have a very few people owning nearly everything, and a whole lot of people are renting. So you don't have any freedom. And then it allows for systematic greed, where a company, corporation can literally grow so big that he owns everything. And so people are striving for that. See these giant companies in America, Walmart and Best Buy, and you know, they completely put out of business small people. So what it is just greed going all over the place. So, and the banking system allows for it. So this is a ubiquitously experienced problem. To go back to the principle, whether to have a bank account or not. To what extent can I use things without becoming attached? Because our problem is, in this world, we look at this world and we see this world not as Krishna's energy meant for God's service, but we see it as a means to our own selfish enjoyment. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarhan upayunjataha nirbanda Krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate. This is real vairagya, that we see how everything is connected with Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy, even ourselves. Not just our bodies, but the soul is Krishna's energy. So our body, we ourselves, everything is meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. And so not to reject anything, but accept everything and use in Krishna's service is real renunciation. But should be practiced only to the extent to which we're not greedy over the things or lusty over the things that we are supposedly offering to Krishna. I cannot tell you the number of musicians who came to Krishna consciousness and used music for Krishna's service simply to have their old lust kama come out, devour him, and take him back to the material world. And they were just claiming, oh, it's for Krishna. But you could see, of course, it was offered to Krishna, no doubt, but there was all this karma cultivating on the inside because I just loved the music. It's the same thing, whether it's a bank account, music. The challenge really is not to allow for that personal, selfish karma to come out and pollute the heart. Prabhupada actually described our position as the game of tug of war. You know what tug of war is? Tugging means pulling, jerking. Tug of war is when two groups of people or two people grab two ends of the same rope and then they pull in opposite directions. They play those games in Slovenia. Scouts, yeah. It's a universal game by now. And so, you know, one side's pulling one way, the other one the other way. So that is our position. We just don't know where we're going to go, Krishna or Maya, like that. And then, you know, as the karma is raging in our hearts, we're Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Krishna, make me not do that. But I don't want to make anyone more worried than they already probably are. But Krishna helps, no doubt. But it helps to the extent we're sincere, like that. So we sincerely need to want the life of purity, not the life of selfishness, which is quite a thing. I mean, I've been very strictly practicing life of sadhana bhakti for 20 years. And my goodness, I mean, it just seems to... I mean, it's getting better. Every time I look back, I see, oh my God, that's behind me. But, you know, the stuff that's still there, sometimes it's really discouraging. So in some ways, in spiritual life, one really has to have a bit of an adventurous spirit. As they say, you never know how dirty it is until you start cleaning. Definitely true about my office. Is that okay? Okay. So, last question because we're running out of time.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for this lecture. As far as I understand, soul is a spiritual entity. So I wonder how it can get disease. Do you mean that as synonym to get covered, maybe?
Get covered. What did you say? Sorry, I missed that word. Get covered. Okay, like covered. Okay. Oh, that's the question. Okay.
I want to understand how the soul can get diseased if it's indestructible.
The fact that the soul gets diseased does not mean that the soul gets destroyed. So the soul is indestructible. It continues to exist forever, has existed since ever, and so on. But the soul can develop that disease, yes. And there's no one else to blame. Because that's one of the points here to learn, and I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but I had it in my mind, didn't write down any notes, but that sometimes we blame external things, and then if we're a little better, we blame subtle things such as our subtle body, like my mind, it's my mind's fault, but ultimately it's really our fault. Because if it was mind's fault or anyone else's fault, then our suffering would be unjust. Our suffering would be an imposition. In other words, it's not my fault, and yet I'm suffering. That would make God unjust, that would make the world unjust, and so on. So it is literally our fault. And therefore, the disease is actually spiritual. So by constitution, even constitutionally, in Vaishnava's theology, the soul is described as tatastha, the energy that's in between spirit and matter. It's spiritual by nature, but it can go either way. In other words, by constitution, we're made like that, that we can actually become diseased. But actually saying diseased is not quite right, because in many ways when we hear the word, excuse me, diseased, we think, okay, it's the germ's fault. Germs contaminated me, so it's their fault. Or a virus or something like that. So again, we're blaming someone else. But literally, it's nobody's fault. It's our fault. Like that. And we're constitutionally made so. If you don't like it, talk to Krishna. That was a joke. Hare Krishna. Is that okay? Okay. You're welcome. Krantrad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.